Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
All right, so my name is Teddy. I'm from Project Diaspora, and our mission is to mobilize and motivate the African diaspora to take a more of an active role in development, socially, economically, and culturally. We really want to target the $40 billion that we spend and send in remittances to Africa. But we need to switch the paradigm from sending money simply to one-to-one solutions to more community-based solutions. And the way to do that, we thought, in this day and time and age, with the communication tools that we have, we thought it'd be perfect to highlight those things, those of us in the diaspora that are working towards the betterment of Africa. But before I get into what a lot of us in the diaspora are doing, let me give you a brief history of the African diaspora. I define the diaspora in two parts. The first part is the classic diaspora. We all know the painful human history of slavery that happened between 1500 and 1800, where approximately 11 million Africans were forcibly migrated from the African continent into the West. That number has now grown to members of African heritage around the world who have spread, and including their ancestors, total about 40 million in the United States, roughly 9 million in Europe, 22 million in the Caribbean, and just over 100 million in South America. And we also define the neo-diaspora as voluntary migrants since the end of colonial rule to up to now. There was a huge 150-year gap of cultural separation between the end of slavery and the end of colonialism, where almost none of us migrated, because either we had no means or for whatever reason we didn't have the opportunities to travel. So my concentration really at Project Diaspora is that neo-diaspora. While the numbers are smaller in comparison to the classic diaspora, we are quite a noisy bunch because we have a closer connection to Africa than the classic diaspora. We have an emotional tie. We have families that are still there, and our memories are still fresh. When you ask a lot of us where's home, we'll tell you Zambia, we'll tell you Uganda, we'll tell you Kenya. But when it comes to really becoming vocal and active in what it is that we do for the betterment of Africa, we have to ask ourselves, where is it that we're meeting? In 1960, there wasn't really a good way for us to collaborate. We didn't know how many Africans were in the United States, how many were in Europe, how many were in the Caribbean. We could see them, but we really didn't have a close connection. So in this day and age, we're collaborating in the cloud to a growing number of us are communicating, are engaging, are starting projects, are collaborating. We're using MySpace predominantly to share African music and culture, and how to keep that cultural tie. Facebook, you search Facebook and you have over 500 related Africa-related pages. Over a 250,000 videos on YouTube. We use Flickr to share images from around the world, from within Africa and from without Africa. And we definitely use Twitter to really send this message all the way through. Twitter has probably been the biggest tool for me collaborating with other Africans that are in the diaspora. It's been really fascinating to see the growth of activism within the African diaspora. We've really never had quite a time in the 40 years that we've been neo-diasporans where we could really engage. We have the tools, and I think we've talked all the way through today on various movements around the world that are starting to use these new social networks and new tools in Twitter to really engage and change the paradigm in how we think about activism. For us in the diaspora, I would say activism started really early. And one of my favorite activists actually was Filippo Marinetti. Now, that might not sound like an African name by any chance, but Filippo Marinetti was born in Egypt, and he lived in Italy. And what you saw playing earlier was a rendition of his Futurist Manifesto, which he launched in 1909. And nearly 100 years later, we have the same spirit of vigor, the same passion of activism, and in changing the way we think about Africa. So this year alone, 100 years removed from when Filippo Marinetti launched the Futurist Manifesto, which we all know, if you were in art, influenced art all the way from Europe all the way to the United States in that time. And this year alone, we saw Zambia economist Dambisa Moyo come to the forefront as really the first African to get prominence on the academic stage in defense against aid to Africa. For many, many years, that topic has been the mainstay of middle-aged white men, if you'll excuse the phrase, people from outside, basically telling the story of Africa. The solutions for Africa have to be provided by, you know, outsiders. It was the first time, really, that I've seen a prominent African actually rise to the same stage and not been put aside because they were African. It was even more encouraging because she was a woman, definitely qualified in her own right. Like her or not, she definitely did a bang-up job of using social media and the cloud to rise to the stage. Her book and her movement, she had plenty of followers on Facebook, used videos in all her debates on YouTube, and definitely used Twitter to the utmost to spread the word, spread the message that we definitely need a better paradigm, we definitely need solutions by Africans for Africa, and it's high time that we started thinking about how to get solutions, our own solutions, as opposed to relying on the West. I was also involved. I don't know whether she inspired me or not, but shortly after that, I got a. If you remember earlier this year, there was a Ashton Kutcher. I don't know what you would call it. I don't know, insecurity burst. You know, where he wanted to get to 1 million followers. Of which he never communicated to, so I don't understand what that was all about. But the crux of it was that he wanted to get to 1 million followers and then he would donate some nets to Malaria No More. I took offense to this because this is basically yet again paternalism, in my view, in that Western media using Africa and our plight to advance their agenda. And I had a problem with that. So I spent half a night writing up a post, posted it on our blog on projectdiaspora.org, and it really surprised me how far it took off. I just thought I would just be sitting out there, you know, as my little rant. And little did I know that Malaria No More was listening after I tweeted it, and then it started spreading like wildfire. And malaria no more responded to their accusations. And then after that, a lot of blogs started participating, and then they it spread after that. And it was really nice to see members of the African diaspora actually take up the mantle as well and engage and give their voice in this discussion. So that's one way we're collaborating on finding each other. When we're coming to the defense of Africa, a lot of us feel the same way. We have a love that we cannot divide, but we come together for a solution. And we also get to meet a lot of other people. And you know, this is a social entrepreneur from Uganda.
And the
I'll
internet,
just
so
skip that discussion. And it's nice also when we're going through and we're posting on Project Diaspora and the projects that we are doing within the diaspora to get comments like this. I said, Teddy and Tracy, I feel like I could pack up and leave and go back to Africa so I can be there to do more. Really quickly, so, you know, we have the diaspora component, but what do we do about Africa? How is Africa participating in the cloud? Well, we have 900 million people in Africa, you know, and only about 65 million of us are online. You know, and right now, this is how the world, you know, we've seen this map earlier, this is how the world sees Africa. There's data on every other continent and country, none for Africa on this map. But we're rising. And this is a quick map to show you that just our participation in the social media space, Facebook, High Five, are some of the social networks. But as you can see, we're still very empty, still white, no activity that's happening. But there's a reason why. You know, this is how most of us in Africa acquire information. This is how we connect. Printed material, often outdated, because there's a lack of energy. You know, and I'll give you some stats. But even with that challenge, we have participation within the cloud. In Uganda, for example, we have 32 million people. 60,000 are on Facebook, and average speeds of 28 kbps and 56 kbps. This is something you probably wouldn't deal with ever. But I toyed around with the idea of putting my mother on Facebook, and I can only anticipate this being her reaction to being on Facebook, and I'm not quite sure whether it'd be a reaction to what I post to Facebook or whether she'd be just scared of the technology. But you know, there's definitely hope in the future because we have a huge penetration on the mobile platform, you know, and you know, we have a lot of innovations going on in the mobile platform within Africa in terms of communications, remittances. Really, if you look at that arena, Africa is really rising. And the only challenge, as I mentioned before, is power and energy that we need. And I'll, in short, I'll leave you with this statement from Steve Jobs that he did I think almost about 15 years ago, said the web is exciting for two reasons. One, it's ubiquitous. And anything that's ubiquitous gets interesting. And there's going to be a time of more innovation that will create a place where there isn't this dark cloud of dominance. And I wanted to say that because that dark cloud of dominance is this technological dominance that we have in the West, but it's slowly trickling down to Africa. And eventually, 900 million people will have a voice in the cloud. And I'm really excited about that. And even though they're not connected right now, I'm definitely excited about the potential that the diaspora has to take lead in that communication and that participation until the time comes when the rest of Africa is online. Thank you.